السلام علیکم ورحمۃ اللہ وبرکاتہ. بسم اللہ الرحمن الرحیم. وی کنٹینیوئنگ ود دی بایوگرافی آف سیدنا عمر رضی اللہ عنہ. سو دمسکس واز اے گریٹ سٹی نیمڈ آفٹر اٹس فاؤنڈر دمشق بن کنعان. اٹ کیم انڈر دا رول آف دا 18th ایجپشن ڈنیسٹی. اٹ از امنگ دا اولڈسٹ انہیبیٹڈ سٹیز ان دا ورلڈ. And this was the center of the idolaters, sort of shirk used to take place there. When Christianity entered it, the idol temples were converted into churches whose architectural and decorative beauty is only matched by the Church of Antioch. In other words, they made very beautiful churches in Damascus. To its south lies Balqa, which is an ancient name for Jordan. To its north lies the Golan Heights. Till today it's still called the Golan Heights. It is a hilly terrain and all of it is cultivated land filled with streams. It was an important trading center inhabited by the Arabs. The Muslims were well acquainted with it since they used to go there as traders prior to Islam. Damascus used to be a fortified city. In those days, cities were built like that. It had unsurmountable walls. You couldn't climb over the wall. The walls were built of stone, 6 meters, 20 feet high, 3 meters wide. The walls had stout, unbreakable gates. Couldn't break through them. So, Heracle had fortified it even more after the Persians had invaded this land. The gates had mechanisms to keep them shut. The city walls were surrounded by a trench, 3 feet wide trench, right? And also the river Barada, the biggest river in Damascus, fed the trench with water. So now, to get across, you have to first go through the river. That trench, which now is like a river because so much water is there, right? Hence, Damascus had become a fort, which was not easily, you couldn't just penetrate it, right? Now we can have a fair idea of how strongly defended this city was. So these fortifications prove the following things. These field defenses were not erected overnight. They were prepared over a long period of time, since Damascus was strategically important and the Romans were afraid to lose it to the Persians. Remember, those were the two superpowers, right? They were always fighting, Persians and Romans. This means that the Romans applied their field engineering expertise quite liberally to realize these fortifications. Numerous engineering resources were utilized, which were not used elsewhere. And the Roman army, they excelled in this field. Roman engineering was evident, you know, like to its height around the city of Damascus. They utilized natural terrain to engineer their defenses. Example, they used the river now, you know, to fill the trench, right? Besides utilizing it as a natural hurdle for impeding the invaders from the north and the northeast. The Romans relied heavily on the city's fortifications. This is what made them gather such a large number of troops there and take a defensive stance. While the Roman forces concentrated at Homs were capable of coming to the aid of Damascus in case of an eventuality and encounter the invaders. So they left some of the army in Homs. If that army is needed, that army can quickly come away to Damascus. So it shows that these people were not fools, you know, when it came to expertise in the military field and also in engineering, right? Now we come to the march to the battle. So Abu Ubaidah bin Jarrah radiallahu anh moved towards Damascus, and he organized his army in the following way. In the center was Khalid bin Walid radiallahu anh. On the flanks, meaning on the sides now, one side was Amr bin al-As radiallahu anh, and the other side was Abu Ubaidah radiallahu anh. Iyaz bin Ghanam radiallahu anh was in charge of the cavalry, all those on horseback. Sharjil bin Hasana radiallahu anh was in charge of the infantry, all those that are walking on foot. The fortified walls of Damascus were fitted with gates, which were the only access to and from Damascus. Hence, the siege was organized on the following pattern. The east gate sector, Khalid bin Walid, he laid siege to that gate. The Jabia gate sector, Abu Ubaidah. Toma gate sector, Amr bin al-As. And Faradis gate sector, Sharjil bin Hasana. Then there was another place called the small gate sector, Yazid bin Abi Sufyan. Right? So these were the people that were laying siege now to these gates. The Persians thought that the Muslims would not be able to endure if the siege went into the winters. Because must remember, in the Arabs are not exposed to the harsh winters of those lands. Arabs don't get snow and all that. Right? However, the Muslims were men of firm iman. Right? And they had battle-hardened sabr. They remained steadfast in face of the changing weather. Muslim commanders utilized the empty churches and mansions as rest houses for the soldiers. They had ready-made chalets. But these people all had huge, huge churches and mansions and all that there. So they started using that. The soldiers in the front lines were replaced by those in the rear on a weekly basis. So every week you're getting fresh soldiers coming on the field. Hence the siege could continue indefinitely. The Muslims did not stop here. They continued to study ways and means to surmount the Byzantine defensive shield. How can we penetrate this fort? How are we going to get in? They didn't just sit there and say, right, we just lay siege to this place until they give up. No, they were using their intelligence now. That how can we get into this fort? Khalid radiallahu anh was able to finally select a suitable place for crossing the hurdles into the city. He chose the place which was most filled with water and most difficult to cross. You'll think now you're going to choose a place that's got the least amount of water and easiest to cross. But no, he chose the place that had the most water and the most difficult to cross. He also prepared rope ladders to scale the walls. You know, it's a rope ladder. They take the rope, they make knots on the rope, they throw it over. On the other side, they have like claws. So they throw it over and it anchors on the top there. And then they clamp up to get over. One day the Byzantines were preoccupied with a grand feast, and they became lax in guarding and monitoring the front lines and the gates. As dusk settled in, Khalid radiallahu anh readied his soldiers, and he took Ka'ka bin Amr, Ma'thur bin Adi radiallahu anhuma with him. He told the rest of his troops, if you hear Allahu Akbar, you hear the cry of Allahu Akbar from the top of the walls, then come to our aid, head towards the gate. In other words, that means when we got in, right? We have opened the mechanism of the gate, you all must now march towards the gate. Khalid radiallahu anh and his advance detachment crossed the moat, the trench with the water, the 3 meter trench with water. Now imagine what intelligence Allah gave them, right? How they crossed it. They took animal skins. They sewed it. They filled it with water. Right? So they made like floats. Right? And they crossed like that. They crossed like that. They reached the city walls and threw their rope ladders onto the ramparts on the top. The rope ladders were equipped with solid claws on the ends to be fixed to the wall, and it must be able to carry the weight of those who are climbing it now. Two of these claws were firmly planted onto the wall. You see, you got to throw, it must get gripped properly. So Kaka and Masur clamped them onto the walls and securely planted the other rope ladders and their claws. Right? In this way, all the rope ladders were arranged to aid the first wave of the Mujahideen now. The first wave, which had now swelled in numbers, descended the walls near the gate. But the first battle cry, Allahu Akbar, was shouted from the top of the walls. This was the signal for the second wave to advance towards the gate. The gate which was now had Muslims on both sides. The Muslims were on the inside and on the outside. Right? So it was opened. Right? They opened it and the Muslim army trickled towards the city from this direction. Right? So this was how they penetrated the fort. Historians differ as to whether the city was taken over by the Muslims with fighting or whether it was peaceful. Like those people just gave up and said, hey, right, hands up, we are sorry, you all can have the place. Right? Most of the scholars are of the opinion that the final settlement was a peaceful one. There was no fighting. These scholars are not sure whether the city defenses were first penetrated and then the Byzantines asked for peace, or it was handed over peacefully, or whether some parts were conquered militarily and the other parts surrendered peacefully. Hence, to be on the side of caution, they say that the city was conquered peacefully. Some scholars are of the opinion that half of it was conquered peacefully and the other half was conquered with force. Right? So Allah Ta'ala knows best what actually happened, right? So Ibn Kathir rahimahullah has said that Damascus was conquered in 13 Hijri. However, he explicitly stated that it took place in the middle of the month of Rajab in 14 Hijri. Right? Khalifa bin Khayyat said, Abu Ubaidah radiallahu anhu besieged the Byzantines in the months of Rajab, Sha'ban, Ramadan and Shawwal. And the peaceful conquest took place at the end of the Islamic calendar in Dhul-Qa'dah. What is indisputable is that it took place after the Battle of Yarmouk. So whether it was in 13 Hijri or 14 Hijri, but it was after the Battle of Yarmouk. Right? So this is how this city which they thought nobody can penetrate, how the Muslims eventually penetrated that city and Damascus fell to the Muslims. Right? The conquest of Damascus was not devoid of the employment of military strategies by the Muslims. They utilized elements of surprise, initiative, seizing opportunities and creativity on the part of the field commanders. This is obvious in how Khalid radiallahu anh carried out this mission. Right? He chose a certain spot. He didn't just do things just willy-nilly anyhow. He chose a certain spot. We'll cross at that place. Right? And then how they made the rope ladders, etc., etc. And then they penetrated. Ka'ka bin Amr said, We stood at the two homes of Solomon for months with Khalid, and we carried sharp swords. This was poetry that Kaka made. We headed towards the east gate with force, and all those who stood there surrendered to us. I say to the ladies of Damascus, our war has reached your city, so put necklaces in the necks of your warriors. In other words, your soldiers, they can't defend your city. They came like ladies now, so put necklaces for them. When we instilled fear in Damascus and Palmyra, they bit their fingers in despair and fright. So after this, obviously, once Damascus was now conquered, so now all the smaller places around Damascus, Abu Ubaidah radhiyallahu anhu sent Khalid bin Walid radhiyallahu anhu to a valley called Biqa Valley, and he conquered it by force. He also sent another detachment, which was intercepted by the Roman commander Sinan, right? So this Roman commander, he descended upon the Muslims from Beirut. Many Muslims were martyred in battle on that day, and hence that place is known as Martyrs Spring, the spring of the Shuhada. Abu Ubaidah radiallahu anhu appointed Yazid bin Abi Sufyan the governor of Damascus, and he sent another detachment under the command of Dihya bin Khalifa towards Palmyra to tame it. He also sent Abu Zuhra al-Kushayri to another place, Bataniya, near Damascus and Horan, where he made a peace treaty with the natives. Sharjil bin Hasana radiallahu anhu conquered all of Jordan by force, right? Except Tiberias on the west bank of the Sea of Galilee. This is now in what they call Israel, we call Palestine. So they agreed to Muslim peace terms. Khalid radiallahu anhu conquered Biqa Valley and signed a peace treaty with the inhabitants of Baalbek. Right? So the forces entrusted with the mission to attack Pella moved south. When they reached its suburbs, the Roman army there had already swelled to about 100,000 troops. Most of them are those who had slipped into the city from Homs, and also the remnants of all the previous battles from the vanquished cities. The Muslim army was headed by Ammara bin Mikhshan. The Roman army faced them on the canal side of the Sea of Galilee. However, the Romans had channeled the sea water into the marshes surrounding Pella in order to impede the Muslims' movement, right? Especially the cavalry. It's very difficult now for the horses to move. Even today, the same technique is used against armored corps, meaning tanks, in the battlefields. They put water so the tanks can't move fast, they're in mud. Hence, the Romans were able to enforce an impregnable line of defense through these endeavors, even though Pella was plain land. Had the ground been dry, Muslims would have easily driven to the heart of the city, since they were very well versed with desert warfare. But now mud, they don't know about mud. Ammara bin Mikhshan stopped. He stopped here. And he distributed his forces to besiege Pella. He said, instead of going in as an army, let us surround Pella. Right? Let us surround Pella. He did not try to invade it because the army there is 100,000 strong, and his army can't move fast. They're going to go through marsh that's muddy. They can't move fast. So he didn't try to invade it. So they besieged the city until Abu Ubaidah radiallahu anhu concluded the siege at Damascus. After the conquest of the capital, Abu Ubaidah radiallahu anhu joined his forces with those that were already at Pella. And now he reorganized the army. In the vanguard, he put Khalid bin Walid radiallahu anhu. In the right flank was himself, Abu Ubaidah bin Jarrah. Left flank, Amr bin al-As. Cavalry, Dirar bin Azwar radiallahu anhu. Infantry, Iyaz bin Ghanam radiallahu anhu. The overall command of the battle was given to Sharjil bin Hasana. Why? Since the battlefield lay within his area of responsibility, so he was given the overall command. Sharjil bin Hasana made arrangements for encampment and supplies for the army. He also devised standard operating procedures for keeping the troops in an alert state. Right? Sharjil himself used to go to bed and wake up in a state of battle readiness. They didn't leave their weapons and their battle clothing. The siege dragged on for a long time until the Romans thought that it is possible to launch a preemptive night strike. Right? The Romans now thought they rather make a move. The Roman surprise attack was headed by Saqlab bin Mihraq. The Muslims responded to the attack in a befitting manner as one man. That means the army wasn't shaking, the army didn't break anywhere. As one man, they responded to the attack. Because they were always in a state of alert readiness. The battle continued into morning and went on during the whole day until nightfall. So from night till morning, from morning till night. While dusk settled in, the Romans were utterly routed and their commander was killed. They were pushed back into the water barrier which they had prepared for the Muslims. Now they were in that mud. As a result of Sharjil bin Hasana's tactics and counter-strike, chaos soon gripped the rank and file of the Byzantine army. The Muslims took advantage of the breakdown of the Roman command structure, and soon only those Romans survived who had managed to flee the battlefield. After eliminating the besieged army at Pella, the Muslims now focused their attentions to the following missions. Sharjil bin Hasana radiallahu an headed towards Jordan. Amr bin al-As radiallahu an headed towards Palestine. If only we can have mujahideen like this in our era. Similarly, Abu Ubaidah bin Jarrah and Khalid bin Walid radiallahu anhuma headed towards Homs. When they reached a place called Merj, a fierce battle took place between the Muslims and the Byzantines. So intense was the fighting that the field became littered with corpses. In this battle, the Muslims were able to put into practice an important and fundamental concept of warfare and offensive operations. When the Muslim vanguard engaged enemy front lines, Tozra, the Roman commander, tried to encircle the Muslim army by slipping a unit out of the battlefield in the direction of Damascus and going round to the rear. So he wanted to encircle the Muslim army. When the Muslims learned of this development, Abu Ubaidah radiallahu an sent Khalid bin Walid in hot pursuit of Tozra to strike his rear. While Ubaidah radiallahu an kept the remaining Romans engaged. So these people went now to come from around. Abu Ubaidah sent Khalid bin Walid behind them. At the same time, the Muslim intelligence network alerted. So you see, they were not just going into one fight and just fighting. They were watching things. They had intelligence, checking what is the enemy up to. All this is important. So the Muslim intelligence network alerted its leadership of the direction from which Tozra was expected to descend upon the Muslims. Hence Abu Ubaidah sent a detachment under Yazid bin Abi Sufyan in that direction. So Tozra is thinking he's going to attack the Muslims from behind. Right? One side, Abu Ubaidah is facing the Byzantine army this side. This side, he sends Yazid bin Abi Sufyan to intercept Tozra when he's coming. And behind Tozra, Khalid bin Walid is coming. The fighting had only picked up in earnest when Khalid radiallahu anhu surfaced from behind Tozra. So now the Roman unit was sandwiched. This side is Yazid and that side is Khalid radiallahu anhu. And this led to its almost complete annihilation. This Roman army was almost completely annihilated. So we'll stop there and continue, inshallah. Allah Ta'ala give us tawfiq. Subhanallah wa bihamdihi. Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdik. Nashhadu an la ilaha illa anta. Nastaghfiruka wa natubu ilayk. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.